But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crown queen waves from the Belfry.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Wealth Show. My name is Sophie Downes, and today I'm joined by Danny Christopher, CEO of the Independent Investment Management Initiative, or the IMI for short. Welcome to the podcast, Danny.
Great to be here. Thank you.
For anyone that might not be familiar with the IMI, they are an industry think tank representing specialist investment boutiques. So I'd like to start, I think, by pinpointing exactly what we mean by boutique, which might sound like a very simple question, but in my experience, everyone seems to have a slightly different perception of what makes a boutique. So I'm interested to hear your insights on this.
It's a brilliant first question because you're absolutely right. I think it can be a little bit ambiguous and there are lots of different ways that you can define or try to define what a boutique is. Some look at AUM, some look at number of strategies, some look at culture, client alignment, lots of different things, all of which are important. I think our starting point is that these businesses prioritize specialism over scale as their competitive advantage. So what unifies our membership is that they will employ a degree of specialism. But the other factors, are important, and we do look at those.
Mm-hmm. And I guess as you spoke about, when we think of boutiques, we kind of need to place them in the wider context of the industry. I've got research from last year, which from Ernst & Young, which revealed that M&A deals increased 26% across the industry in 2024, a trend that I don't think will be stopping anytime soon. So why are these kind of smaller specialist firms important within an industry that is increasingly seeing consolidation?
Yeah, well, what's happened with consolidation is that there are fewer larger asset managers whose business models depend on scale, who are now responsible for managing a much larger client AUM. And what this means is reduced investment choices for clients. And it's also a little bit of an obsession at the moment around costs rather than value. So why are boutiques important? Well, boutiques offer genuine expertise. They offer something which is genuinely different and probably less likely to be correlated with the rest of your investment portfolio. We always see there's no free lunch in investing apart from diversification. Because they're experts, they're entirely focused on doing one thing well. So they're deploying skill to generate alpha for clients. And then there's a point around agility. So, being able to safeguard client alpha by using capacity constraints, they're able to react quickly to market moves on new opportunities because they're managing smaller pools of capital. And then there's a point around innovation. So we strongly believe that innovation comes from smaller firms and startups that can adapt quickly to change. They have less layers of bureaucracy and management and decision-making processes to get through when you're in a smaller firm. So, that's a really important point. And then there's also a point around, I think, around client service. I mean, if you're one of 100 clients, let's say, in a boutique, compared to one of 5,000 potentially in a global asset manager, it's more likely that you'll get a tailored service when you're kind of looking at a boutique. So, you can sort of pick up the phone to your client service person or potentially even the fund manager who's making those decisions with their own money, possibly their friends and family money as well, alongside their client money. So a multitude of different reasons as to why these types of companies are really important in a consolidated industry.
And I guess you've spoken then about, kind of the benefits and I guess what boutiques can offer, especially. I'm interested in your own experience, having gone from working at global asset managers like Schroders and L&G. What made you want to go to the boutique side?
I did grow up in larger firms. I had a very good experience at Schroders and at Legal & General. I learned the ropes. I learned how to manage client relationships and stakeholder relationships. I had mostly excellent managers. But, the business models are fundamentally different. And as an employee, you sort of experience asset management. Your experience of asset management can differ. There are some quite obvious differences between large firms and smaller firms, in terms of the boutiques that we represent, just in terms of the amount of employees that you're looking at in those companies, the amount of different departments within those firms, the amount of strategies these firms are running. But I think one of the key differences for me that I experience differently in terms of global firms and boutiques is that in a larger firm, you're typically only one part of the asset management value chain. And my view is that if you expose yourself to more of the asset management value chain, then you can deliver more for clients. I was really busy all the time. I had several hundred clients when I was at Legal & General, which were sort of sat under and, you know, they were intermediated. So I sort of faced off to consultants. And then at Schroders, I had sort of 8 to 10 high value clients. So it was a you know, really busy job, and the propensity to be able to do that, to move between different teams and learn more about the value chain was quite tough. But, you know, I sit with chief compliance officers, chief operating officers in boutiques that can also pitch me the fund, you know, really eloquently. And I can sit with a head of distribution who can really know what needs to tick in the back office to make something happen for a client, you know, a mandate change or whatever it is. So I think that you have the ability in a smaller firm, in a boutique, to be able to just touch on so many other parts of the asset management value chain, which means that your interactions with clients are just, you know, it's just way more streamlined, and you have a greater understanding of that. So for me, it was moving to this side was a natural book for me, because I think I'm much more aligned to how boutiques operate. I mean, I'm curious, tenacious. I'm a problem solver. I roll my sleeves up, and I think that's lots of the sort of different qualities that I see in boutiques.
Mm-hmm. Having had that insight into both big firms and smaller ones, what are the biggest challenges you see on the boutique side?
There are specific things which are quite challenging for you know, for boutiques as well, in terms of their ability to generate interest and I think get recognized by clients. So if I think about some of the hard limits that are often placed around investing in a boutique, so they like to see 100 million in AUM, they like to see a 3-year track record, other kind of things like that. Or maybe it's a sort of the stability of the investment team, they like to see more people because it's what they're used to seeing in larger firms. So I think when you're looking at a boutique or thinking about investing in a boutique, you're really investing in the individual managing the money and how they tick and the culture that they've laid out. And that just doesn't happen over here in the same way that it does in some other places. So there's also the career risk problem is what we call it. So that there's comfort in the familiar. So, you know, large allocators and investment consultancies will you know, they like big branded household names, and you know, it can be a little bit scary to say, you know, look at these guys over here. They're doing something a little bit different, a little bit quirky. You know, the performance has been great. Why don't we get to know them? Because, you know, maybe you don't know the name. And so it's just sort of safer to stick with a fund that's doing okay, but is well known, is big and has lots of clients in it. And, you know, all those sort of things which tick the right boxes. And then there's issues around platforms, I think, as well. So we have a bit of a chicken and egg situation at the moment where platforms don't particularly like putting boutique funds. They don't like to put them on their platforms because they, you know, they want to they're asking for client demand, essentially. But the boutiques kind of come back and say, well, to get the client demand, we need to be on the platform. So that sort of needs to be unraveled, you know, in some ways. That can be a particular challenge for boutiques. I mean, in addition to that, you know, these firms are small and typically quite resource constrained. So if you think about increasing amounts of incoming regulation and complexity of that regulation, they don't have swathes of, you know, of compliance team and limitless resources to be able to, you know, unpack all of that in the same way that larger firms do. So that there's quite a lot to unpack in terms of where we're sitting in a very pro-passive, pro-consolidated environment, an obsession with fees, and then the other sort of what I would say anti-competitive barriers that kind of sit around boutiques in terms of platforms, the career risk and all of those sort of elements as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to come back to the regulation point, because I think that, you know, is the critical thing here. However, you know, I guess we're talking at quite an interesting point, because there does seem to be a cause for optimism. We had the FCA's Nick Hume on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he said this was just the start of red tape being cut across the industry. So from your perspective, how can the FCA make regulation easier for smaller firms and startups? And how are you engaging with the Treasury in this regard?
I mean, quite simply, we just need to reduce the amount of regulation that is currently required. My view is that it needs to be proportionate to the investment risk the firm is running and the client types that they're managing money for. And as I said, you know, smaller firms simply don't have limitless budgets and compliance resources, meaning that they have to unpack and interpret increasing amounts of regulation that's been put upon them with limited resources. There are a couple of things in particular that we are engaging with Treasury and the FCA on. So the first one is the reforms to AIFMD, which is currently the consultation and call for input for that is currently still open at the moment. We've highlighted that the extent to which a fund falls in scope of AIFMD should be determined by its risk profile. So use of leverage, distribution model, private investment exposure, those types of things. And in addition, we're asking for clarity around the exact reporting and regulatory expectations under the new regime. And as I mentioned, just so that we're not wasting time or cost on trying to interpret what those regulations are. We're still working with the regulator and Treasury to outline the sort of finer details of what both of those will look like. And the consultation period hasn't quite ended yet. So we're yet to submit our final response. But we met with them last week to discuss quite a bit of this. And all of it was received relatively well. And they've invited us to continue engaging as they look to make these reforms to AIFMD. The second part is that, you know, we're involved in a much larger project with the FCA that is quite focused on startups. So I'm part of a working group that's comprised of Charles Hall at investment bank Peel Hunt, James Kaufman, who is a partner at Hill Dickinson, former Redwheel Capital CEO and IMI board member Dan Mannix, and Jamie Carter, who was also chairman of the board of IMI for some time and is now managing director at an emerging market startup, Varus Partners. And we are all champions of the UK and UK asset management. We've been working for some months on a proposal for the government and the regulator to consider a new regime for startup UK fund management companies. And we've all recognised that it's become increasingly difficult to establish a new fund management company in the UK. The barriers to entry are significant in terms of length and complexity of the application forms, the direct and indirect costs of applications, the time it takes to get authorised, and then the other challenges such as availability of seed capital for these businesses. And we're worried that the UK has become a less attractive place to start a fund management company. And we run a real risk that the UK doesn't foster innovation and entrepreneurialism in fund management. So we truly see a place for smaller innovative managers who are entirely focused on, you know, deploying expertise and delivering alpha for clients. And if we don't create an operating environment where they can launch with ease and compete, you know, we're worried that we're going to lose future growth and that they'll locate to places where the barriers are lower, essentially. So what we're asking for is a more proportionate approach to ensure that the UK is attractive on a global basis and has a flourishing and diverse investment management sector, one that contributes meaningfully to economic growth.
Can you tell us a bit more about the specifics of this and what this will look like?
Yeah, so specifically, we're proposing the introduction of a UK exempt reporting advisor, so UKERA, and a corresponding UK exempt reporting advisor fund, which is designed to accelerate the authorisation process and provide a clear framework for launching a UK fund management company that will target institutional only. So let me explain a little bit more about how that will look. So the US ERA or exempt reporting advisor is a type of investment advisor which is not required to register with the SEC as it benefits from certain exemptions. So this sort of looks at the amount of money that's running and the types of clients that it's marketing to. So the exemptions are currently, you know, solely managing venture capital funds or private funds with AUM of less than 150 million. And then they have a proportional reporting and compliance obligations put upon them. And you can get this up and running in a matter of weeks. So what we're asking for is an equivalent regime, which is tweaked for the UK. So having a UK ERA would allow fund managers to launch with speed, minimal administration, minimal cost, minimal uncertainty. And it would mean that there are mechanisms in place to graduate to a fully authorised fund management firm when those, when various thresholds are cleared. So the thresholds that we've put as a recommendation is that they can manage up to 250 million pounds unleveraged for up to 30 institutional investors. But then we also need a fund structure which can be established with ease to be managed by UK ERA. And we don't propose launching or creating any new fund structures. We propose repurposing or recategorising existing funds. So institutional only, determined by a high minimum investment threshold of £100,000, and you know, the self-certification regime so that we can be sure they're the right type of investor. And we've put a number of sort of other requirements about this, the details of which we are, you know, really excited to discuss with the Treasury and FCA. So, we're really hopeful that we can establish this regime and that we're on the path to encourage new entrants and enhancing UK asset management.
Mm-hmm. And do we have any, you know, if this is approved and it's taken up, do we have any kind of idea of how long this might take to be in practice or the stages in which this might happen?
I mean, we're asking for this to be sort of equivalent to how this happens in the US or some other jurisdictions, which typically happens in a matter of weeks, which should be attainable to do.
Perfect. And then as a final question, amid this competitive environment, what would be your top tips for a boutique that's starting out now?
I mean, join the IMI. That's the simple answer. You know, it's, if you're thinking about launching a fund management business, and obviously we would love to be able to get this proposal over the line, to be able to work with Treasury and regulator to make it simple for the institutional only. But at the moment, it's tough. It will take longer than you think. It will cost more than you think, and more things will come up than you think. And IMI is a network of brilliant entrepreneurs who have been through the entire spectrum of what it means to launch, grow, close a boutique. And so if you are thinking about doing that and you want to start a boutique, I would recommend joining the IMI because, you know, we are the people that have done it.
Okay, thank you very much for joining me today, Danny. You can access more information about the IMI, including its publications, online at theimi.org. For any questions, email us at wmnews@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929. The Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.